It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication lead to complication. My emancipation don't fit your equation. I was on the humble, you on every station. Someone play young Lauren like she done. But remember not to game the one of the sun.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My very special guest this half hour is historian Heather Cox Richardson, author of 7 books, as well as the Substack Letters from an American. She is a professor of history at Boston College, focusing on the American Civil War and Reconstruction. She's also taught at MIT and UMass Amherst. Really happy to have her. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned through the whole show today. At the top of the hour, I'm really excited. I'm going to be joined by Fatima Goss Graves. She is a co-founder of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund and the CEO of the National Women's Law Center. That promises to be an incredible conversation. You won't want to miss that convo either. But to pick back up where we left off, Heather, we were talking about the potentiality and the likelihood, frankly, given all of the available evidence of corruption within a second Trump administration, supercharged by the Supreme Court's immunity decision. And one of the cornerstones of his economic policy proposals, his tax policy proposals for a second term are tariffs of some 20% on all imports and 60% on Chinese imports. He's told the American public again and again and again that China will pay for these tariffs, that other countries will pay for these tariffs. And as you put it in your Substack this past October 5th, that is a deliberate lie. But let's hear it from the man himself. Jess, if you would play the former MAGA president's comments on McKinley.
We're going to be doing a lot of things, but we're lowering taxes. We're going to use tariffs very, very wisely. You know, our country in the 1890s was probably, Marcia, probably the wealthiest it ever was because it was a system of tariffs. And we had a president, McKinley, right? You remember Mount McKinley? And then they changed the name. But one of those things, he was really a very good businessman, and he took in billions of dollars at the time, which today it's always trillions, but then it was billions and probably hundreds of millions. But we were a very wealthy country.
Wow. There's a lot of history here. And we were talking before you came on the show that some of the language that's being used today to talk about tax policy, some of the language invoked by the former MAGA president, is eerily similar to language that was used in our country's past over this very same debate. We had effectively moved away from tariffs as a fundamental source of revenue to fund our federal government following the Great Depression, largely in response to the massive needs and the demands of working people and the middle class. But the history of tariffs started much before that, Heather. Help us begin the beginning. Why is Donald Trump invoking McKinley? Was it a good idea back then? Was it working for working people when we first deployed tariffs in this country at a massive scale?
Well, it's just so interesting to hear anybody actually talking about McKinley. But the important thing to remember when we talk about tariffs today is that Trump is really not talking about economic policy. He's really trying to invoke this idea that he's got this magic solution, and he's harking back to this era that he thinks was so great when he says America was so rich. Well, if you think about the Gilded Age, the people who were rich were the robber barons, and ordinary people didn't have any protections in the workplace. They didn't have any minimum wages or maximum hours. The reason we have the word mangle is because a mangle is an iron, these two heavy superheated rollers that smash together and iron things very quickly. The rollers are automatic. And if you caught, you're a worker in one of those factories and you caught your fingers in the rollers, your arm would get dragged in and it would be destroyed. You would be mangled. So this is what he is harking back to and saying was his fabulous time. And in that time, the tariffs, these giant tariff walls around the country did in fact protect industrialists. But what they enabled them to do was to collude to raise prices because they didn't have any foreign competition. And they also swallowed up all the small entrepreneurs in the country. So what he's really talking about is throwing all the economic power and political power in the country to a very small group of oligarchs. And as we were talking about before, he's made it very clear he would rather align the United States around the world with authoritarians who have this sort of oligarchy around them than to continue to press American democracy.
That right there, Heather, is the core of why this is so frightening to me. It is, he wraps this pseudo-economic policy, which isn't an economic policy, in the trappings of populism. But it is the very antithesis of tax policy that will actually assist a vibrant, growing middle class, which is necessary for a capitalist democracy. People need to have purchasing power. And it harkens back to a time where the wealth inequality in this country was absolutely staggering. Right. And we have now exceeded those inequality metrics, those inequality levels of the Gilded Age. Just a bit of data to add to our conversation here. From 1948 to 1973, productivity, worker productivity in this country increased 97%. And over that same period of time, hourly wages increased 91%. That is a reflection of the New Deal policies coming out of the Great Depression. It is a reflection of moves away from these industrial protectionist tariffs that existed before that time and a move to a progressive income tax to fund the federal government. If we look at what has occurred with those same metrics since 1973, we find that productivity still going up by an incredible margin, 72% since 1973. And yet, in that same period of time, hourly wages have only increased 9.2%. That differential is staggering. We're effectively entering an economic period that is very analogous to what led to the Great Depression, especially if these sorts of protectionist policies are able to take hold under a second Trump administration. I stumble over the word trust, of course, because what we did after that was trust busting. We had to break up these monopolies that were exploiting workers and driving wealth to the upper echelons, the top 1% back in that time.
Well, I think that there's a little bit of a caveat about what you said in that the Biden and Harris administration has worked very hard to combat that extraordinary wealth exchange. So from 1981 to 2021, that is Reagan to Biden, about $50 trillion moved from the bottom 90% to the top 1%. And he worked very hard to reverse that. But what you said about taxes, I think, is very important because this idea of tariffs does go hand in hand with taxes, because what happened is in 1913 under Woodrow Wilson, the government ceased to rely on tariffs to pay its revenue and instead started putting in place a progressive income tax. Now, Trump, of course, has called for getting rid of a tax on the wealthy and on corporations and replacing it with this extraordinarily high tariff. And what he keeps saying is that China is going to pay for these tariffs. Other countries are going to pay for these tariffs. But in fact, the people who pay the tariffs are the consumers at home. Now, in the 19th century, people were very aware of that, and they actually called the tariff a tax on working people. And it was on those grounds that they called for getting rid of the tariff or lowering the tariff. And Trump sort of elided that so people don't recognize that what he's saying is we're going to make the wealthy and corporations stop paying taxes, and we're going to replace that with a tax on American working people. And it's very, very clear that that's what's going on.
According to the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, a report that just came out earlier this week, it's a nonpartisan organization. They analyzed the impact of the totality of Trump's tax proposals on each income quartile of the United States. And what they found was that Trump's tax policies, if enacted, would result in a reduction of tens of thousands of dollars for the top 5% of income earners in the country. And every other quartile, the rest, the 95% of the rest of us, would see our taxes go up. That's the root of this. I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the language, the rhetoric around this. You wrote on October 5th that McKinley defended these extraordinary high tariffs that helped enrich monopolists and the steel magnates and these monopolies and trusts and the robber barons by calling them, quote, indispensable to the safety, purity, and permanence of the republic. And Republicans, as voters started to demand a movement away from tariffs to taxes, attacked that as being socialism, as adopting a socialistic approach. They doubled down on this. They said this, quote, to create a red welter of lawlessness as fantastic and as vicious as the dream of a European communist. Certainly has echoes of today, does it not?
Isn't it astonishing? There's nothing new under the sun. But the, you know, one of the arguments that they made in the late 19th century, I think you also see the echo of in this moment, which is that a few good people should run the economy and should run society for everybody else. And that was the idea, that you wanted to concentrate wealth and power among people like the Andrew Carnegie and J.D. Rockefeller, because they were the ones who really knew how to make things work. And you see the same thing today. The reality, though, is that in a democracy, theoretically, we believe that everybody is created equal and has a right to be treated equally before the laws. That is, the economy should not be rigged in favor of the very wealthy. And we have a right to have a say in our government so that we can make sure the laws do reflect a broader interest. And, you know, we're fighting the same fights today that they fought in the 1890s.
It's truly incredible the parallels that can be drawn. And again, you can find some of those parallels in my very special guest Substack called Letters from an American. Her name's Heather Cox Richardson. She's a professor of history at Boston College, specializing in the American Civil War and Reconstruction. When we look again at that period in the late 20s and early 30s, Republicans again went back to tariffs as a policy solution. And this is the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, despite the fact that voters had been saying, we don't think this is working. It's not working for working people. It's making the rich richer, and it's not improving the middle class at all. And in June 1930, Republicans passed that Smoot-Hawley tariff. Help us understand, how did that happen exactly, right? Because, yes, we end up talking about the Electoral College again. How did that happen exactly, and what was its impact?
Well, the Smoot-Hawley tariff was an attempt once again to double down on this idea that if you built high walls around the country, industry would develop and it would be able to raise prices raise wages by having higher prices. So that was the idea. But of course, what happened was twofold. The first was that other countries promptly slapped tariff walls on the United States. So world trade really slowed way down at the same time that they were not able to get dollars to pay back the debts they owed after World War I. So it's going to lead pretty directly to World War II. But at home, what the tariff did was it essentially created price rises for ordinary Americans. At the same time, they did not have enough buying power to sort of prime the pump and get the economy going again, because there just weren't enough people making enough money to buy things. And this is why we get real embrace of Keynesian economics in the 1940s, by at least 1940s, but played with in the 1930s by a slightly different name. The idea that you really should put money into ordinary Americans and have policies that make sure ordinary Americans make enough money, because they're the ones who buy stuff, so that the economy will keep on rolling along. And that's exactly what Biden has done, and it's worked.
And we find ourselves again in a time where productivity and income inequality is exploding and workers' wages aren't keeping up. We're going to come back with some final thoughts as we discuss the history of tax policy and tariffs in this country with my very special guest, Heather Cox Richardson, professor of history at Boston College and author of the Substack Letters from an American. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You just lost one.
What's a bomb?